shop around. Oh yeah, you better shop around.
Good morning. You're listening to WTUL News and Views. This morning, we're covering some key issues surrounding tomorrow's public hearing at City Hall that addresses French Quarter strip clubs. The Planning Commission has just published the results of Motion M1622, the Adult Live Performance Venue Study. The study is 93 pages long with 43 pages of appendices and nearly 700 pages of public comment. And it calls for the shutdown of more than half of the 23 strip clubs in and near the French Quarter. Meanwhile, people who work in strip clubs, as well as French Quarter business and homeowners, have responded with concerns about the Disneyification of the district and the city's role in tourist-centric development that leaves behind the livelihoods and well-beings of the people that live and work in the French Quarter. This morning, I'm speaking with Lynn Archer, New Orleans resident and stripper.
Hello, Nora. I'm really glad to be here.
Thank you for coming in.
So I'd like to start by just naming the issue at hand. And what's happening is that the Planning Commission is urging the City Council to look over the 23 strip clubs in the French Quarter and close down as many as they can. So they've basically been window shopping in the Vieux Carré Entertainment District, which is the six blocks of Bourbon Street between the 200 block and the 700 block, where there are 14 strip clubs. So they're recommending a cap that prevents any new strip clubs from opening, and they're recommending to reduce the total number down to seven through zoning laws and a spacing law that separates them block by block. In the club that I work at, we get called to the stage all at once for bachelor parties. At the club I'm at now, they call it roll call. In other clubs I've worked at, they call it the roundup. So I thought I could maybe do the roll call for you for the 23
yes.
strip clubs. Okay. Okay, here we go. Babe's Cabaret, Rick's Cabaret, Rick's Sporting Saloon, the Penthouse Club, V-Live Club New Orleans, Larry Flint's Hustler Club, Larry Flint's Barely Legal Club, Big Daddy's, Temptations, Passions, Visions, Stilettos, Lipsticks, Shishi, Bad Boys, Scores, Oz, The Corner Pocket, Deja Vu Showgirls, Bourbon Pub and Parade Disco, Showcase Bar and Lounge, Chez Joey, and Dixie Divas.
That's a long list.
It is.
One of the rationale that underpins the Planning Commission study is that strip clubs bring drugs, crime, and violence to Bourbon Street. Is there more drug crime or violence in French Quarter than any other neighborhood?
The only thing that I'm sure that there's more of on Bourbon Street than in any other neighborhood is bourbon. So Bourbon Street is a pedestrian river of alcohol, and mixing intoxicated people with people who are trying to do their jobs involves a lot of sweat and tears. A metaphor that I keep coming back to when I'm working on Bourbon Street is the River Delta, which our city is built on. It's a city that's built on water and on shifting sand. And my stage name happens to be Delta, and it's proven to be very apt during the 6 months that I've been here and the six different clubs that I've been hired at. Strip clubs in the VCE are already precarious places. They close and they reopen and they change names and they move, and so do the strippers who work in them. The Adult Live Performance Venue study threatens to increase this precarity even more in the coming years. It came about because of City in Motion M1622, which also happens to be the name of a rifle. So the motion is essentially a gun pointed at the soft target. That's a quote from the study itself. The soft target of sex workers in their workplaces. Strip clubs get targeted for the kinds of crimes that happen everywhere in the French Quarter, in hotels, bars, venues, restaurants, and on streets. Nude dancing is protected under the First Amendment. It's protected by federal law. I should be able to just walk out onto Bourbon Street and take off my clothes and dance. But what would probably happen to me, the first people that would show up would be a police officer and somebody asking me for my permit. So cities have to justify their limitations by citing what they call secondary negative effects, like drugs or crime, to enforce zoning laws and registration fees and things like that. It's basically the same discrimination language that we hear around city housing. If you're trying to rent a house or buy a house and the rental agent or the realtor is like, oh, don't live here, like the so much drug crime, the schools are really bad, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So in October, around Halloween, there was a raid, including the ATF, on a lot of the strip clubs. I think five of them lost their liquor licenses. It was known as Operation Trick or Treat. So is this City Council Motion M1622 related to Operation Trick or Treat?
It absolutely is. So one of the ways that the city can legally target strip clubs is by suspending their liquor permits. Operation Trick or Treat was a collaboration between the ATC, the 8th District Police, and the State Police. So to use the language of the study, the secondary negative effect for us is that strippers were arrested in these raids, and a great many service workers lost their jobs when their clubs closed or they got suspended. And when I got here in New Orleans, it was Halloween weekend. It was just a few days after Operation Trick or Treat, and I was probably the only stripper in New Orleans in November who hadn't heard about the raid. So I was hired right off the street at this tiny club, and I walked in, and I was one of three girls working, which made me really uneasy right away, and the club was completely empty of customers. It was like there were tumbleweeds blowing through the bar. It was that quiet. And so I moved to another club, and it was also another tiny club that was operated by the Alano family. They own a handful of restaurants, bars, and clubs all around the quarter. And there were 23 girls working, and there were no customers. Again, there was nobody there to watch. Everyone was scared. Dancers were scared to dance for people, and customers were scared to pay them. It was a disaster. And a lot of the suggestions in the study have to do with the outward facades of the clubs that are both their real public face, what you see from the street, and their reputation. So the tiny clubs, like the Alano family clubs, have really terrible reputations. And the study talks about regulating the size and the shape and the public entryways of the clubs, and these smaller clubs will fall under what's called a non-conforming zoning use, and a lot of them already do. So they're historic buildings, and they've been kind of grandfathered in, and they won't be able to meet the building standards that they're being asked of. So it's closure based on money and on class. So like in the same way that the buildings are kind of being squeezed, the workers that don't conform to the physical requirements, when those clubs shut down and they try to work at the remaining larger clubs, those people are going to be out of work. So that's including dancers who are tattooed or whose weight or height or age fall outside of the ideal numbers, who are pregnant. If you're male or trans, or even if you read as gay, you're not going to be able to get hired at these bigger ones. They're monolithic.
Yeah. What does the adult live performance venues study mean for gay clubs in the VCE who would be impacted by club closures?
So in her memoir, Stone Butch Blues, Leslie Feinberg reminds us that stones and pros belong together, that sex work is a stone profession. And I'll quote Leslie, who learned from experience, "To fear the cops as a mortal enemy and to hate the pimps who controlled the lives of so many women we loved." So Leslie tells a story of gay people, genderqueer people, and sex workers who overcame identity politics, and they came together as working people to stand against oppression. And their protests were taking place in bars during raids and on the job site during labor strikes. The recent hate crime in Orlando at the Pulse Club calls to mind the arson at the Upstairs Lounge, which happened right here in the French Quarter in 1973. It was a group of gay men who were exercising their right to peacefully gather, and they were burned to death in the same building where the strip clubs Dixie Divas and Shay Joey are today. Gay people and sex workers are side by side in this fight, and often they're the same person. So right now, the bar and the job are the same place as well, and we have to be the stone in the river. They call us soft targets, but we're hard. We have to be hard like stone.
Yeah. Some of the rhetoric, for example, Kristen Palmer, the former city council person from Algiers French Quarter area, I think she was there 2010 to 2014. Mm-hmm. She takes up the argument that the work of dancing cannot be consensual or fair for the women participating in it due to a culture of sexual objectification. Can you respond to that claim?
Yeah, I have plenty to say about that. So Palmer's relying on what we sex workers call sex work exclusionist feminist ethics. We call feminists like this SWERFs, So I'll bring in the big bad wolf of the Swerfs. She's the second wave radical feminist, Andrea Dworkin. You've probably heard of her. Mm-hmm. She said a lot of things, including, "The tragedy is that women so committed to survival cannot recognize that they are committing suicide." So she's accusing sex workers of being unable to recognize their position in life, essentially. But we recognize it perfectly clearly. When she says we're committing suicide, she effectively blames us for the times when we're fined or we're fired or hurt or arrested or killed on the job. The deaths of local workers Jacillus Wright and Jaron Lockhart weren't suicides, they were murders. And they happen because sex workers are divided into compartments. I mean that, like, literally and figuratively. It's really hard for us to witness each other. We're in a position where if we report a crime against us, we run the risk of being arrested for the work we do. It doesn't matter if the work is technically legal or illegal. Strippers walk the line between legal and illegal all the time, so do escorts, and we're basically on this tightrope. Dworkin goes on to say that prostitution in and of itself is an abuse of a woman's body. In prostitution, no woman stays whole. It's impossible, and no woman gets whole again later after. So if you're reading through, if you have time to read the 690 pages of public comments, there's a lot of this kind of broken woman rhetoric, and it's coming from a couple of very loud Vieux-Carré entrepreneurs, evangelists, and politicians. And they define sex workers as broken and talk over them instead of listening to them. So in 136 pages, there's no stripper mentioned or no stripper quoted in the study. And I was also told that not one single public comment in those 690 pages was from an actual stripper. So if there is one, it's like gold in the gravel. So if they cared about our perspective, they wouldn't have carried out the study so quietly. Like, all the window shopping that happened was happening in secret. But don't worry, we'll talk on Tuesday.
Solutions outlined in the Adult Life Performance Study relied heavily on law enforcement and surveillance. In French Quarter, ordinances that control citizens' movement in French Quarter have increased. So things like the noise ordinance and asking buskers to have permits and using a curfew on youth, as well as law enforcement agencies, they've proliferated. There's the state police, there's the New Orleans Police Department, there's the French Quarter Task Force. How does this dynamic influence your work now, and how would it influence it later?
So the study encourages increased police surveillance in the clubs and enforcement of some municipal codes and laws about physical contact and distance, and they're called lewd and obscene acts. So it creates more opportunities for police to arrest us. There are, laws and municipal code violations that are, being broken all the time. So it's more moments where we're choosing between getting hurt by a customer or by a cop, and we're being given this false choice all the time. So if you're choosing between being a victim of a crime or being accused of a crime, justice just isn't happening. And if we're being defined as either a criminal or a victim, our citizenship is being denied as well. The registration and licensing laws for strippers that other states use are encouraged in the study as well. Licensing and regulation for a stripper is essentially a scarlet letter if you have to register with the police department or with the state. And this is something that they do in Vegas, for example. New Orleans is sort of colloquially known as First Vegas because it's been doing vice for such a long time and doing it so well. And so in the studies section on the history of adult entertainment here, we're reminded that in the mid-1800s, sex workers registered and paid fees with the city just to work, and they were called Loretta Ordinances, and they were declared unconstitutional, but for 40 years they were upheld in various iterations, and that led to the creation and ultimately the destruction of Storyville. So the study really nods to the VCE as today's version of the famous red light district Storyville, even while it tries to destroy it in the very same way that happened back then. The study also includes an overview of other cities that have successfully thwarted strip clubs with similar measures, and I can tell you that they're some of the worst cities to strip in the nation. So if you choose to resist these changes, you're resisting a national trend toward the oppression of sex workers, and this is something that runs really, really deep in New Orleans.
There seems to be a national movement that's inappropriately using terms such as modern-day slavery and sex trafficking. What do you think of this?
Anti-trafficking rhetoric is probably some of the worst around, and it's super old school. So I think there's somebody who can speak to this a little bit better than I can, which is the sex worker, activist, researcher, and writer Tara Burns, and she wrote a media guide to covering sex trafficking. So Tara says, words mean things. Sex trafficking is a legal term with many different definitions in different states and countries. The legal term has been confused with the common mainstream usage, which tends to involve people being forced into prostitution. This has led to a lot of confusion all around as to what has been alleged or what the statute the person is being charged with actually says. It rarely refers to people being forced into prostitution. So how do we distinguish between trafficked workers and those doing the work voluntarily? Trafficking does not mean that a person is doing the work involuntarily. In all of the charging documents for sex trafficking cases that Tara has seen, she's never found one where the person was doing the work involuntarily. Sex trafficking on the federal level means the use of force, fraud, or coercion against people performing commercial sex acts or the existence of minors in the industry. So I'm going to paraphrase a friend here when I say that if you're going to advocate to end human trafficking for sex workers, educate yourselves on what human trafficking actually means, who actually gets arrested, and what charges are actually brought to bear. Most of the time, it's law enforcement placing trafficking charges on sex workers who are working in pairs, who are traveling between states or countries, or staying or working in each other's homes. So here in New Orleans, people come here from all over the world to work in the wintertime during Mardi Gras and New Year's and Christmas and Jazz Fest through the whole holiday season and the festival season. I made a friend named Celeste who has been coming here all the way from Ireland for years to work the season. And it's more likely for Celeste to get deported on a trafficking charge than be trafficked in the way that fits the stereotype. So she'd be trafficking herself. That doesn't make any sense, but that's what's happening. That's what's actually happening. So I would say that the anti-trafficking rhetoric about this modern-day form of slavery is just a really elaborate form of gaslighting, and it pushes people's buttons because it conjures up these horrible, horrible images. But there's horrible stuff happening right now. For example, I moved here from Oakland, where there's this massive scandal going on that's involving an underage sex worker who's also named Celeste Guap. And she was involved with a series of police officers who solicited ongoing relationships with her and disclosed information to her about their raids and stings. So the police action in Oakland right now is just this complete cruel joke. Rebecca Solnit says that men are afraid that women will laugh at them and women are afraid that men will kill them. And right now the Planning Commission is basically trying to kill our ability to work. So keep in mind that in Oakland, where Celeste Guap is trying to make a living and trying not to get killed or arrested, in Alameda County, it's illegal to have any strip clubs at all. It's county law, and that's part of the reason that I moved here. I couldn't make enough to live where I grew up without stripping, but the strip clubs in San Francisco just lacked safety and they lacked clientele. So that's the situation that they're trying to create here. They're trying to drive us out, and you're going to have more situations like Celeste Guap if we let this stuff go through.
Yeah, that's a really terrible story. If anybody wants to learn a little bit more, Hard Knock Radio on KPFA did some good reporting on it that you can just find online. So that's KPFA if you search Hard Knock Radio. So when Kristen Palmer first introduced this moratorium on new strip clubs, she was responding to the violent death of a local dancer. And she related her family's personal story of losing a dancer to suicide. Public comment in the city council chambers was generally supportive of the ban, with citizens concerned about the safety and well-being of their fellow New Orleanians. But when we look to the online comment, we're overwhelmingly against the ban. So people who make their living in strip clubs and those who support them say that the ban is moralistic and undemocratic, that the ban would interfere with their ability to make a living as well as their safety, right? So it's a really complex issue, and both sides are concerned about violence. So as someone who's navigating both the fear of violent attack and institutional violence having to do with labor and gender and sexuality, can you describe ways that community members can offer care and solidarity to you and your coworkers?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking this question. It's really vital and it's really, really rare. So when I'm working, I find myself thinking about this math problem. You might be familiar with it. I think about it all the time. It's called the prisoner's dilemma. So basically it goes like this. Two people are accused of a crime and they're taken to separate rooms and they're asked to confess their crime. So they're each given the choice to betray their friend in exchange for a shorter sentence or take the chance of remaining silent. If they both betray each other, they both go to prison. If one betrays the other and the other one doesn't, the silent one will go to prison for a long time. The one who doesn't confess, they get ratted out. And if they both remain silent, they will both go to prison for a shorter time. So one thing that I've seen a lot in the places that I've worked is that many strippers will try to put distance between themselves and dancers to do what they call extras. So they're doing illegal stuff in the club. And because of this, a lot of strippers will refuse to identify as sex workers at all. They don't want to be associated with anything that could put them in jail. And the fact is that regardless of whether a stripper does something legal or illegal, they can still get arrested and go to jail. If somebody exposes themselves to me, for example, it doesn't matter. I'll be the one to go to jail. It doesn't matter what I actually did. So we're facing this really dangerous game every time that we try to talk with other sex workers about what exactly they do, or we talk to our other coworkers in the service industry at large, or when we talk to civilians like our friends or to other employers, and certainly when we're talking to people who make and enforce laws. So if you play out the Nash equation over and over again, the prisoner's dilemma, for an infinite number of times, iterations, you'll get these really elaborate patterns. Remember that movie, A Beautiful Mind? He's like writing on the chalkboard. And, you know, it just gets so complicated that it's like this impossible paranoid tangle. And that's life for a lot of sex workers. So if you want to help a sex worker, what you can do is just cut through that tangle, cut through that knot. And the way that you do that is by listening. So listen to a sex worker without judging or shaming them. You can cut through that tangle by helping them when they ask you to, without trying to save them or define them as something or something else. You can cut through the knot by sharing your rights and leveraging those rights when they say they need you to. You know, just love a stripper. They're really easy to love. Love is something you do. Just take action. Just show up. Please just show up at this hearing tomorrow afternoon at City Hall, 1:30 to 5:30. We'll be there. We would love to see you there. It's really easy. You just have to show up.
Thank you for the invitation. again, that is tomorrow, Tuesday, June 28th, 1:30 to 5:30. It's at City Hall in the City Council Chambers. And if you can't come, you can read the full report in the city planning section of NOLA.gov. You can also write the French Quarter District Council member, Nadine Ramsey, at districtc@nola.gov. But if you can come out and show your support, I think that would be a really solid way of standing up for your neighbors. So Lynn, before we move on to Counterspin, it's 8:30. Can you just say, end with what you dream of as a solution or future reality to this community issue?
I'd say that the only way for sex workers to have a safe and sound life and a safe and sound livelihood is to decriminalize sex work the world over. It's the only way. We need the same human rights, the same civil rights, and the same labor rights as everyone.
Thank you so much for coming on the radio show.
I'm really happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and we'll see you tomorrow. Again, that's at City Council Chambers tomorrow, 1:30 to 5:30. That's Tuesday, June 28th. So please come show up to support.
You're listening to WTOL. A disclaimer. The views, opinions, and conclusions expressed on this show are not those of Tulane University or WTUL New Orleans.
Freedom of speech. You take it for granted, right? You shouldn't. On the next edition of Alternative Radio, hear Howard Zinn on Second Thoughts on the First Amendment. That's Alternative Radio, heard Thursdays at 8 a.m. on WTUL, New Orleans.
Before we jump into Counterspin, this public service announcement is brought to you by WTUL New Orleans. Academic Year in America is seeking host families for international teenage students arriving in the New Orleans area in August. The students will attend local high schools while living with their host families. More information is available by phone. The number for Academic Year in America is 504-897-0207. Thank you for listening. We've got Counterspin on, and after that, Democracy Now!